If you seek revenge, dig two graves. This is the Quest for Power. Welcome back, my friends, to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are your lore masters of European history, Scott and Michael, and we are going to take you on a quest to expand that European knowledge and to discuss all of the history and the lore that impacts Europe, and eventually leads into and influences today's world. Today, we're going to be diving into the life and talking about the reign and life of Clodomer, of House Merovingian, first of his name, King of Orléans. If you're looking for some extra adventures and want to join us in the Lore Masters Guild, you can do so at patreon.com/questforpower.
There we have side quest episodes to discover people, places, factions, things hidden in European lore dungeons that are not in the main quest, and you get a shout out for welcoming you to the fold. Scott, what have you been up to? We're about to start a new campaign. Well, a soft reset campaign.
Yeah, so because I feel like this is becoming a segment in its own right. So previously in our episode of D&D Misadventures, so our group had kind of, by the DM's own engineering, had kind of torn itself apart. So some characters had died. Others had kind of decided to retire. And then there are others who made it out okay and decided to kind of regroup at another location. There are six members in this party, four of which decided to retire their characters, or through their characters dying, had to create new ones. So pretty much a new campaign. But that's okay, because this is a open sandbox style kind of world where we kind of let the world flow around and the players kind of get to choose the path that they want to go. This is less of a railroading kind of campaign and more of a do whatever you want. So we spend a little bit of time, the characters trying to get used to each other, get to know each other. So we have a good cast of new characters, and they're going to be doing some good old ruin and dungeon delving.
I'm pretty excited for it. I retired my paladin, and because I figured his character arc actually had an arc, and I thought he went from a paladin who was like, I don't really care too much about, you know, religion, I just use it for my own powers, to becoming a like very vicious anti-undead paladin that was got really extreme at the end there.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting counterplay within the party between, you know, paladin and characters who were a little more chaotic and quite frankly evil. And yeah, then you had some folks who were a little more indifferent, others who just wanted to just be here for the adventure and the challenge. So I think it was good. And so now we have a pretty good brand new mix of characters, a new cast of characters, but some old ones to kind of hold things together. But in the end, that old original quest that the party set out to do, which was collect magic items for a lord back home, is still in action. But it is kind of taking a backseat, at least for now, while they kind of figure out what their new priorities are.
If you think about it, only one person is left from that.
That's true.
Because the Owlin that we had didn't join till a little bit later. Well, okay. The reason we've been a little bit late on stuff is I proceeded to be not killed, but quite closely killed by my son. Who is a very cute weapon of mass destruction.
You didn't run into any soothsayers that foretold a prophecy?
No, I did not. I did not. Maybe a fabric, a rip in the fabric of reality happened. I don't know. Well, before we tackle our main quest, we want to let you know about So You Think You Can Rule Persia. We talked about it last week. They're a pretty cool podcast. Kings betray each other to get plot and gain more power, the ability to go after it. If you love all of the infighting that we have on this podcast, you definitely will want to check them out. There's a lot of chaos in Persia that follows Alexander the Great, and he becomes Alexander the Great is not great for the Persian Empire. In fact, he's pretty bad for it. So after he dies, when he conquers it, it is quite an unhinged story that goes on later following him.
Hi, I'm Sergio.
And I'm Umberto.
And we're the hosts of So You Think You Can Rule Persia, a podcast where we rate and review all the kings of Persia from Diocles to Yazdegerd III.
Join us for a look at the rulers of Iran, from the Achaemenids all the way to the Sassanids, with plenty in between.
We'll be discussing the lives and myths of the rulers of Persia before ranking them all and deciding who is really worthy of the title of King of Kings.
We hope to have you along for the ride.
Alrighty, so quick pause this podcast and go search up So You Think You Can Rule Persia, hit subscribe on theirs, and then you can come right back on here to finish this episode so you don't miss out. Otherwise, if you're like me, you'll be like, yeah, I'll get it later, and then you completely forget and you miss out on a great story. Alrighty, DM, let's begin today's session.
The Frankish kingdoms are at war. King Clovis of the Salian Franks is currently murdering anyone he considers family, except his wives and children.
Yeah, that's what we learned in his episode. But before we begin today's session, we got to talk about our sources. Got to have our useful tools. Today we have Gregory of Tours. Although this is before his time, he's going off other people's stories and notes, but he is pretty diligent about it. Many historians of Gregory, kind of ironic, historians of a historian, have said like he actually takes it pretty seriously, and it's not just him making up stuff. So we got to go off of. So we're going to begin our session in the castle or the palace, whatever it is at this time, of Clovis and his wife Clotilda. Word is sent out to Clovis that his son is born. He most likely finishes taking an axe out of a family member's head, finds his horse, and then probably heads back home. Clodomer is then presented to Clovis, and Clovis is ecstatic to have another boy being born, despite the first one, if you remember, dying because Clotilda decided to baptize him. At least in Clovis's head, that's the way it is. Despite her first son dying, though, Clotilda tells Clovis that she wants to baptize her newborn son, which is Clodomer. And this is to wash away his original sin, and that way if he does die, he will be able to get to heaven like his brother. According to the Catholic Church, at least at this time, I think it is still even now, I could be wrong, you're born of sin when you come into the world, so if you don't get baptized, you might either go to hell or you get sent to purgatory, depending how strict your church is.
Yeah, I've heard differing, I guess, opinions on the level of, like, say, I guess, I don't want to say ignorance, but because that's a bad word, but basically, were you aware that Christ was a thing and Catholicism was a thing?
Yeah.
Basically, if you'd never heard of Catholicism and you were not aware that there was ever a choice, that doesn't necessarily condemn you, but I'm not a theologian, but that is something I do remember hearing about.
I don't think that
I have also heard the original.
I was going to say, I don't think that's true because they talk about in Clovis's episode, we went into it. Kildebert is not, is it? Yeah. It's, is it Kildebert? his father, Clovis's father? Let me check.
In any case, yeah, I mean, older, I guess, versions of Catholicism definitely prescribe to the born a sinner and you will die a sinner unless you are baptized.
Correct. It doesn't matter if you didn't know about it before. They're just like, well, that's just tough luck.
Yeah.
I was looking at
the more modern a much more modern interpretation.
Yeah, correct. Yes. I'm sure the more modern one is different.
Varying by church. But back then it was absolutely a thing that if you did not get baptized, then you were a dirty, dirty sinner.
Exactly. So
I'm pretty darn confident.
That's I just want to say that so you can understand why Clotilda is so adamant about this. Because think about it, you did this the first time to your son and he dies. Would you want to do that again? Like, you have to have an insane amount of faith to do that again. So anyway, she goes to Clovis and says, hey, let's baptize him. And Clovis goes, absolutely not. That's how the first one got killed. And a huge argument, erupts between the two, I'm sure. And despite Clovis' clear and direct order not to, the stubborn Clotilda has Clodomer baptized, and immediately he gets sick to the dismay of Clotilda. I wonder if it's something in the baptismal water that caused this.
I know we joked about this before, but again, that Family Guy episode, the tainted holy water. The priest blessing the water didn't wash his hands after going to the bathroom, and all the water is tainted.
That reminds me of the Wheel of Time, and they have the one power, and it's like a magic system, and it's called the taint, where if men use the power, they go insane. There's a whole backstory to it. Highly suggest Wheel of Time if you want to dive into 16 books and lose tons of hours of your life.
What else were we gonna do?
It's super good though. I highly recommend it. Amazon has a show. I have yet to watch it past episode 2. I probably should watch it more, but the books are so in depth and stuff. I'm sure the show is just gonna completely skip over things that are really, really intricate to the books, and I might just enjoy the memory of the books. Anyway, once he gets sick, Clovis, when he finds out, just flies up into a fiery rage and goes, I told you not to, and you did it anyway, and now look what's happened. He's gonna die thanks to you. After Clotilda most likely, ends in tears, because that's a horrific thing to say to your wife. Clovis storms off and he goes, grabs his army, and he marches to go kill some Alemanni to relieve some frustration, or Alemanni, as we have called them before, too. There's different interpretations.
Yeah.
Pronunciations. My brain does not work today. So while Clodomer is sick day and night, Clotilda prays and prays and prays to have her son healed. And eventually God hears her prayers and Clodomer recovers from his near-death illness. So yay, he survived.
Christmas miracle.
I don't know if it's Christmas miracle, but never know. Early Christmas.
Christian miracle.
There you go. Christian miracle. I like it. Clodomer most likely grew up in a constant war zone. Remember at this time in Clovis's episode, there is just constant war. Clovis is either conning people into giving him their kingdom, or he is conning them and taking them out, or just flat out just taking his army and committing mass violence to grab more power. And I'm sure Clodomer is in the army with all of this, as a lot of, you know, not Germanic, I was about to say barbarian, Germanic princes are to be raised.
Yeah, he's learning from his papa.
Yeah. He would have specialized in the hand-to-hand combat training, and the main thing probably is to ride and take care of horses, especially during battle. I can't imagine what it's like to try and keep control of a horse during the battle, where you have the sounds of like men screaming and like metal crashing against each other.
Yeah. Horses get easily can easily get like spooked or something, or have the rational thought of, hey, things are dying here, I should not be here. That's a thing that would go through my mind. But it also makes me think about, you know, for battles, and then also in modern movies, right? Horses, right? They train horses to do all sorts of stuff and do mm-hmm. very stressful things for the animals, but they can do it kind of on command. So I've never considered how one would train a war horse, or what training they'd have to go through.
What's also interesting is when we say horses and cavalry, it is not the cavalry that you are thinking. We do not get close to the cavalry you are thinking till like the end of the First Crusade. It's well into, I think it's the 1100s. They're basically ponies at this point. Are carrying full armor. So it's not what you think it is, which is always kind of interesting that, and it's going to be this way. So every time we talk about it up until, gosh, 1100, 1200 is when the horses finally start actually being bred for, you know, they're a little bit taller. Otherwise, it's just ponies that are riding into battle, which is an interesting way to look at it.
You know, people on average were shorter back then, right? So it's less
true.
It is less comical.
It's still comical.
I mean, a little bit. I guess I don't know how effective, because especially military strategy would have for horses also would have been largely different back then too.
I mean,
then you know, more modern horse.
Yeah, more than the age of chivalry horses, even, which is, you know, going to be coming up in France in about 400 or 500 years.
Things you take for granted.
In 511, Clovis, his father, the king, fails his death save and is now dead. We don't know what killed him, but he died in 511. According to Pactus Legis Salicae, or also known as Law of the Salian Franks, his kingdom is to be split up equally among his heirs, that being Theuderic, Clodomer, Childebert, and Clotaire. It was a kind of practice before then, but Clovis puts this into law, which dooms the Merovingian dynasty and then the Carolingians after them. Clodomer is chosen to receive the kingdom of Orléans, and fun fact, the city of Orléans, and by extension the city of New Orleans, are named after, I think, arguably the greatest Roman emperor, Aurelian. I highly suggest you check out his episode out on Roman emperors, Talus Rancium. He saves the empire. It would have ended, I think, 100 to 200 years before if he didn't come along. Like, the empire was just Italy, and then it grew to like three times the size once again. It like he recovered it essentially. So that's what it's named after. When Clodomer is crowned king, we have Theuderic the Great, who is the reigning Ostrogoth king. That is our episode 18. And we have the pathetic Vandal King Thrasamund, who was the, if you remember, the peaceful persecuting Vandal King. Kings before him decided to, you know, persecute with violence, and he would try and set up debates to get people to convert.
Yeah, because that works so well.
It really does.
Yeah, ever tried debating somebody into converting their faith and therefore their way of life. I'm sure it's easy.
Well, we don't hear anything about his reign, even though it starts in 511, until 517. He marries a woman named Guntiuk, and she may have been the granddaughter of the Burgundian king Gedeisel, who has starred in several of our episodes now. And together they had three sons, Theudebald, Gunthert, and Clotald.
Good job, King G, or God G, as we called him.
That's right.
We didn't know how to pronounce his name prior.
Yeah, so yeah, his line passes down into the Franks.
God G.
Also, if you recall, Clotilda, his mother, was a Burgundian princess as well. And when she was young, her father and mother were slaughtered by her uncle, King Gundobad. And for some reason, he decided to kill her mother by throwing her into a well. Or he killed her and then threw her into a well. For some reason, only the mother. I don't get it.
It's the start of a new family tradition.
It really is. And several years go past since that. She now has power. And in 523, St. Clotilda incited her sons to attack Gundobad's son, Sigebert, because Gundobad's already dead, so they need to get vengeance on someone. And Sigebert is currently the king of the Burgundians. But Sigebert is not alone. He is backed up by his brother Godomar. During the battle that follows, the Clotilda alliance defeats the Burgundians, and Clodomer himself captures Sigismund while he and his family are hiding in his monastery that he created. So once Clodomer captures Sigismund and his family, his brother Godomar manages to get away, and Godomar runs into the open arms of Theodoric the Great. Clodomer grabs Sigismund from the monastery, which is a pretty big no-no, that's sacred ground, and he throws him into the dungeons while he figures out how to wrestle control of the city. And according to Gregory, a priest came up to Clodomer and warned him, saying that I would not kill him. And he actually says, like, quote, do not lay violent hands on him. And when you go to Burgundy, you shall win the victory.
But does he heed his advice?
That is the question. No, he does not. In fact, he completely disregards the priest, in an act of pure pettiness, hatred, and vengeance. He has Sigismund beheaded and his body symbolically chucked down a well. His wife and children are also executed for just existing.
Symbolic justice, or I'm sorry, poetic justice. It's, I love it.
Is it though? I mean, yeah. Sigismund did nothing.
Yeah, but the sins of the father.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I personally don't like, but like is it. That but again, we're talking poetic justice, not good justice.
That is true. But, you know, the sources try, especially Gregory, tries to portray Clotilda as this saintly woman. That's not a saintly act by any means.
Yeah.
And normally I say, you know, sources blame the women because that's what they do notoriously. But Gregory tries to really hide this. And you got to dig deep that it looks like, I think Clotilda incited this one.
That stands to reason. Hey, Catholic Church, it's a powerful thing.
It is.
Especially during those times.
Definitely. Yeah, they controlled everything. Well, as you can imagine, this ignites a blood feud with the Burgundians. So yes, it may be poetic justice, but now that poetic justice has just turned into a feud that is going to continue. Sigismund's brother Godomar is now the new Burgundian king, and he returns to Burgundy, Wow. He is the new Burgundian king, and he returns to Burgundy with a fresh set of troops and highly trained troops from his ally Theodoric the Great, who's ridiculously powerful at this time. He is almost emperor status. And immediately, once Godomar arrives there to his capital, he massacres the Frankish garrison there. So, you gotta respond to this, right? You can't just let, you know, an attack on your men go unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
In the new campaign season of 524, Clodomer and his brothers set out, including his half-brother Theodoric, and they all go out and they're gonna go fight, take the fight against Godomar and take revenge. On the hot summer day of June 25th, 524, the forces clash in a vicious battle at Versonce. I cannot speak French, but Battle of Versonce, we'll say. And in a stunning upset, Godomar, outnumbered 4 kings to 1, wins the battle, and Clodomer is killed in the fighting, thus ending his reign.
The end.
The end. Pretty quick, rapid succession of events. It's pretty impressive he won 4-1. I mean, yeah, it's his own lands, but that's quite a feat to be able to pull off.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the relative strength of the other kings, but yeah.
They've been unchallenged up to this point. As we've gone in the previous episodes, like, they really kind of get what they want. His sons are placed in the care of his mother Clotilda until Clotaire, his brother, marries his widow Guntiuk, which I think it's Leviticus in the Bible says something directly against this. This happens with King Henry VIII as well with his first wife.
Ah.
So that's the only reason I know it's Leviticus, because of there's a song in the musical Six that talks about it.
Look at that.
However, his brother Clotaire and Childebert want to get their hands on Clodomer's kingdom. His sons are pretty young and defenseless. And so they force Clotilda, their own mother, to either cut their hair and make them live as monks and, you know, no longer are Merovingians, or have them be slain. Clotilda, in a pretty badass move, pretty said, piss off. I wasn't raising them to be monks. I raised them to be kings. Despite that being a pretty badass move, Theudebald and Gunther are killed right in front of their grandmother. Their brother Clotald managed to not be there, must have gotten wind and ran away. He cut his hair, became a monk himself to save his own life, and he would go on to become St. Cloud, which is, there's a city in Wisconsin, and I know of a very famous city in Minnesota. There's a lot of things named after St. Cloud. There's a lot of churches and stuff, so this is that St. Cloud.
Ah, like the Final Fantasy character.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Oh my God, that's funny. Yep.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm pretty sure those are different. If... Final Fantasy is based off of the Bible. That would be incredible.
That would be.
I've never played the game.
Especially because it's a Japanese game. That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah. No, I was just poking fun. But
well.
Yeah. Gosh. So is that just like the end of the line? Bloodline?
For Clodomer. Yep. That's it for him. Currently, Clovis has 2 sons remaining. Childebert and Clotaire, who were the culprits behind the murder of his family.
Okay. So the end of a branch of the family tree.
Correct. Yep. We had Theudebert's branch cut off, and now we have Clodomer's branch cut off.
All the more or I guess all of the less.
What is it? Too little Indians?
All of the more opportunities for more inbreeding when we go further down the line.
Yeah, have a nice straight line for the family tree.
Yeah, that's about the whole of it. I can't wait for all these kings down the line to have like 12 toes or something.
Yeah, a lot of our early episodes, there's going to be a lot of setup, but there, trust me, there's going to be a lot of payoff that's going to come as a result from all of this.
Okay, we'll be waiting with bated breath.
Yep. In the meantime, are you ready to rate them?
Yep. Let's give her a goo. Royal power.
How long do you think his reign was?
Yeesh. Longer than I think, but less than I had hoped. 2 years to tell with these Frankish kings. I'm willing to give him a good... Because I missed dates. Let's give him like 15 years.
Pretty damn close. 13 years. He ruled from 511 to 524.
All right. Not too bad. I'm like, he didn't have enough going on to justify a really long time, but he wasn't stupid enough to make it tragically short.
I'm guessing what happened once he got, you know, control of his kingdom. Once he was given reins of his kingdom, since it was probably, you know, a part of the grander kingdom, he had to lock that entire area down. These brothers were pretty ambitious, even though they seemed to not have attacked each other directly. They'll go after their children, but not each other. Oh no, that does happen, but neither here nor there this episode. Anyway, the positives I have for his royal power. He is the only one who is credited with capturing and executing Sigismund, and no one appeared to challenge his reign at any point, so he locked down his borders. Didn't sound like there was court intrigue. Granted, could be just Gregory didn't feel like writing about it. He was exasperated with court intrigue, as we learned in his Patreon episode. But, yeah, I don't really have too much here other than what we talked about. Won a battle, lost a pretty big battle that ended with it losing his life.
Yeah, I mean, it seems fine enough. If we want to just go straight into numbers, seems like a 5. Like, he was there. Sounds like he really didn't make things so much better or worse. Straight down the middle.
Yeah, I don't know. Have we been doing 5 as in you did nothing? It's neither here nor there. And then
that's about how I view it.
Okay.
You know, it's not like he did nothing, right?
Yeah, because he did have heirs just because they didn't get into, you know, adulthood, right? You know, before he died. Not exactly. Well, I mean, it is his fault, but
that'll be a stability mark. Now, it's one of those things where a lot of folks in a similar spot probably would have ended up in the same place, I feel.
Yeah.
And which is to say, he's competent enough.
He did
things reasonably well, had no, as far as we know of, no intrigue, or at least none that was so major that caused a massive disruption internally. So if you're able to focus on external forces, I think that there's something to be said about it. It's just that.
Yeah,
it's kind of so-so. I like, it's like, for me, it's a 5 or a 4.
I guess since he is the one who is credited with capturing Sigismund and executing him, like, he is the brother that took the lead on that one. That's a mark of power. I think I'll give him a 5 on that. That'll be enough.
Yeah, same. 5 and a 5 for 10. All right, infamy.
I mean, the big obvious one. He oversaw the brutal execution of Sigismund and his family for his mother's vengeance. Basically did an eye for an eye.
I like some, yeah, it's classy. But, you know, it's not all that in a bag of chips. For me, it's another like middle of the road, like give him a 6 because it's a little outlandish to be executing other families.
Well, I think the minute you execute Sigismund, you have to execute his family. I think that's just the rules of the game. I don't know if that's that infamous. I honestly was thinking like a 2 because it's just, I don't know.
It's tough.
It wasn't like he took the initiative himself to go execute Sigismund. I have a really big feeling this is Clotilda who is behind this, and he just, you know, went along with his mother.
If a criminal's put up to an activity,
so he's like,
usually it's the criminal who's the
one
who's infamous. Not always, unless they're true. Like a super crime lord, you know.
I can't move from a 2 though. That's all I'm giving.
I'm willing to. I guess we'll go with like a 4 for me.
There you go. Wow. Normally, I'm the one who gives more points. Got to switch up here.
Little switcheroo. A 4 and a 2 for 6. All right. Religious passion.
I could not find anything other than his sons, and one of his sons ended up becoming St. Cloud, but I don't think that's him.
You can't build churches while you're at war.
Yeah,
as the old saying goes.
He actually went against the words of a priest. You know, he went into sacred ground and took Sigismund forcefully out along with his family. I'm going to have to say that's against the church, and I'm going to have to go 0.
Yeah, I was going to say 0 as well. So, 0. Stability.
During his reign, his kingdom seemed pretty stable. I can't say like a 5 stable. It wasn't like Gregory was going out of his way to tell us, yeah, like, you know, there was so much peace in the land. I mean, this is the Dark Ages after all. I'm going to have to go with a 4 out of 5.
Okay. I'm willing to give a 3 just because war is kind of an unstable thing. And
even external war did not happen internally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely... I say 3 just because of war, and then obviously kind of destabilized things.
I guess, yeah, you are taking people away from their families. No.
Yeah, it's a toss up because you can, you could argue, for example, the United States has been at war for a lot, and for a good chunk of it, you could argue that the United States has been pretty darn stable, right?
Yeah. So
you can have wars externally and be totally, you can have your population almost insulated from it. But
yeah,
I feel like we're a step removed from that. Plus, again, King is involved in the war itself, and I know that's commonplace of the time. But
wow, you know,
when your king dies in battle.
We might have given Clovis too much with the 5. I'm gonna have to agree with you. You're talking me down. I'll go to a 3 as well.
Oh, dang. Yeah, it's a tough one, and probably with the mood of the day. But I think there's a level of also stability in how you look at it relative to what it was before.
That is true.
Are you expanding? Are you contracting your stability? So, like, Clovis did a whole lot of, like, warmongering and stuff, which is kind of unstable, but also in the long term crafted a lot of stability in the long run. Whereas this just doesn't feel like that. This feels like he just, if anything, made it worse.
It definitely made it worse.
Which kind of went against the religion, which is a little bit of a bold move if you're yanking people from churches or cathedrals or monasteries.
Yeah, in fact, when you can just sit around, honestly, you can just sit and wait for them. Eventually, they got to come out. You don't have to give them food or anything. You can siege them. Now, if people are going to give them food, I think you have to let them. It depends. It gets broken a lot in history. It gets used a lot, but it gets broken a lot.
Up for interpretation.
Yeah.
So
more like guidelines.
I think it's reasonable to have like a 3 and a 3 for 6.
Yeah.
Just because, again, it's not like he did anything horrible, It's not like he really was all that.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Yeah. All right. Well,
small dings. So, all right. Royal demise.
He died in battle. So that's something. This is not the battle, you know, like the revenge battle that already happened. Like that would have been more epic. This is just, this is just a feud that broke out between the families because of, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's because of the revenge, you know, mission, but I don't know. It's a feud.
I mean, he could have been martyred maybe a little bit, you know, kind of like, hey, he died in this feud battle. That's going to make us angrier. We're going to go after these guys more.
But he wasn't.
No. Well, in fact, then, they just took that answers that question. That's a two for me.
Yeah, I'll do a two as well.
So that, two and a two for four. Legacy.
All right, so dynasty-wise, two of his kids are murdered shortly after his death. So that's two down. And then his son, Clodoald, chose to renounce his inheritance and became a disciple of the hermit Severin in Paris, also known as Paris. And because of that, he is no longer a Merovingian. And so that took his line down to zero after his life.
Yeah, it's a big mark against. But I don't know, it feels like the... I guess, yeah, it's more of his son being the saint, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the big thing is since we don't get a chance to talk about Clodoald in, you know, future episodes, we'll just talk about him here. As a monk, he traveled the province, which is a southeastern part of France, and for 11 years there, apparently he healed many faithful Christians. So he got his miracles out of the way before he died. In
very nice.
551, he returned to Paris and became an ordained priest. And eventually he got tired of so many people asking for his healing blessings that he's like, screw this, I'm out of here, and went to a hermitage, which he himself built. And
it's nice that you get so exasperated with requests that you decide to build a whole establishment.
Yes, and he builds it in a modern Parisian suburb named Saint Cloud.
Wow, look at that.
So I don't think he named it that, but that's eventually what it became.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's cool. I enjoy that little
something to remember him by.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's kinda worth like a one for me.
Kind of fun. So and then you know, his entire family isn't gone. There's one person left, his wife, and his wife becomes the first wife as his brother Clotaire, who has her children murdered to steal Clotaire's king, her dead husband's kingdom. That's just horrific if you think about it for more than 2 seconds.
Yeah, not a lot of mercy in this time.
No. Oh, that poor woman. For legacy, I agree. I have to give him one for St. Cloud. You know,
yep.
That's all. That's it.
Yep, he's got something special in that bloodline. Just didn't last very long. So, all right, so one and a one for two.
All right, so Scott, what are the totals we have here for our buddy Clodomer?
All right, so royal power out of 20, got a 10.
Not bad.
Infamy out of 20, got a 6.
Not great.
Religious passion out of 20, a whopping 0.
Oof.
Don't need to be a math professor to figure out that math.
Nope.
Stability out of 10. Got a 6.
Not terrible, but not great.
Yeah. No, it's serviceable. If you're okay with 60%. mean, your school teachers may disagree.
I think our what is an A and what is a B is very, very different from school.
Yeah, we're a little easier than school. So, Royal Demise out of 10, a big 4. Legacy out of 10, 2.
Oof, you failed in that department.
So off of the back of Royal Power and not a ton else, out of 100, you have a grand total of 28.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah, we're not too surprised here. A guy who rules for, I say, only 15 years.
That's 13
years. We're getting
to
the point where the rulerships are starting to get longer. You know.
Yeah.
So
we just don't know what happened during most of those years because it didn't suit Gregory's narrative of, you know,
he's not a good Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, just because he got a low score, he still could have that epicness to be crowned a high king. But he seems kind of bland and should be sacked and become a minor lord. Or do we find him so abysmal that he should be burned at the stake?
Minor lord. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't do anything egregious. Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
He kept the peace. People respected him enough, at least in life. Not in death, but they respected him in life.
Yeah, no, not at all in death.
So you take it with a grain of salt. You get to join the big lump of people that sit in the center of the standard distribution.
Mm-hmm.
The parabola.
Yeah.
And join the rest of them in the hall of mediocrity.
There you go. He will have a nice plaque for him in the grand hall.
Yep. Bronze medal.
There you go. Oh, is it bronze medal or participation trophy?
No, bronze medal.
Oh, well, there you go. Look at you.
Participation trophies. I feel like now, as a kid, maybe a little bit it stung. But I feel like it's almost more insulting if you just didn't get anything at all, right?
I mean, yeah, and now it's that way.
Like, I think as a kid, I don't know. As a kid, I probably didn't notice that much. But I think the bigger purpose, side tangent, is that it felt like it helped me remember the things I participated in when I got a participation trophy. Not so much that I did well in it.
Yeah. Yeah,
the
that's
more
true.
Sense that, like, oh yeah, during these years
I did that. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think I've never seen it that way before. It's a good way. Yeah,
that's how I view it. They did their duty and they did it nobly enough. Get the participation trophy.
I like it.
Like bronze medal.
I like it. That's fun.
All right. Tangent done.
We did a lot of tangents this episode, but we didn't have too much to talk about. Before we close out, we gotta shout out a big thank you to So You Think You Can Rule Persia. They featured our promo on their episode 52, Musa, who is the first of 3 women to ever rule Iran. So that's pretty freaking cool. Highly suggest check out that episode.
Dang, didn't know women ever ruled Iran.
I know, either did I until that episode came and I was like, oh wow, the current government I bet wants to hide that.
Maybe, I don't know. That's always kind of a weird thing. Plus I'm not going to pretend to know what people half around the world are thinking about their former government. So.
That is true.
That particular one is not my business.
That is true. Yeah. Stress. Fly away.
No, it's just like, you know, they got a different view in its modern politics. So
yeah.
I will let the Romans do as they do in Rome.
All right, and with that final note, that'll bring us to the end of Clodomer. Let us know what you thought of him. Do you agree with us placing him high in the hall of mediocrity? You can catch us on Messenger, on Facebook, and Instagram at Quest for Power, or you could email us for a little bit longer form at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please give a 5-star review on podchaser.com or wherever you get your podcasts. This really helps us drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed, and so we can keep creating this kind of content. I don't know about you, but I'm enjoying all of these stories that I've never heard of before. If you think we did a really good job and you want to go on an adventure, you could join the Lore Masters Guild and go on side quest adventures with us. And you can do so at patreon.com/questforpower. That's all we got for this session. Next session, we are going to review Clodomer's brother, Childebert the First. And with that, the king is dead.
Long live the king!